Today, I'm talking to Christy Baines of the Baines Server Group at Jamison Sotheby's International Realty in Barrington, Illinois, the northwest suburbs of Chicago. A real estate agent for over 34 years, Christy started in traditional resale. It was within her first year that she was offered and transitioned to an on-site opportunity. She was the first salesperson hired for the Winstone development in North Barrington, Illinois, with its highly acclaimed Jack Nicklaus Golf Course. In 13 months, she and her team pre-sold every home in the 750-acre community. After selling Winstone, Christy was the broker and led strategic planning of inception sales and marketing for four more new residential developments in and around Chicago, including Barrington, Long Grove, and St. Charles. In 1995, Christy transitioned into resales with her brokerage, Winstone Realty. In 2005, Winstone Realty was selected and offered the esteemed and coveted opportunity to become a Sotheby's affiliate. In 2007, she and her business partner finally accepted. As a part of the agreement, she was able to sell her brokerage to an investor who, of course, was agreed to and approved by Sotheby's. Christy achieved what most real estate agents aspire to and dream of. She sold her business. She then continued and continues to forge ahead as a top real estate agent, still paying it forward to her team and the industry at large. In our conversation today, she shares details and stories behind the transformation of her career, how she grew from on-site agent to agent on top.
Thanks for listening to the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. This podcast was created for real estate agents across the country to come together, sharing ideas to take your, their, and our business to the next level.
Hi, everybody. It's the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. Today on the show, we have Christy Baines from Chicago, but really Barrington in the northeast suburb or northwest suburbs of Chicago, in that Jamison Sotheby's office. Christy, good to see you. Thanks for coming on today.
Good to see you too, Jerry. How have you been?
Good. Last time we saw one another was it 3 years ago now?
Probably. You were on a panel with Jamison. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a long time, but good to see you again, even on Zoom.
Yeah, it is. It is. When I get into Atlanta the next time, we'll have to go have lunch or something.
Yes, we do. Now we're just like, don't even take me there. I'll start talking about all the restaurants I love. So back to the show. Thank you for coming on. Let's start with how and why did you decide to become a real estate agent? Everybody, 34 years ago, by the way. 34 years, you know what you're doing.
Well, it just kind of evolved. I always had an intrinsic interest in interior design. And I think that houses were just a natural flow for that. And I did a brief stint in the restaurant industry and thought, oh my gosh, I should get my life regulated. And so I'll sell real estate. Well, that was a laugh.
Life regulated. I love it. So also real estate. Clearly you didn't know yet.
Clearly I did not realize it.
So 34 years ago, you're in the restaurant business, and of all things, of course you thought it would regulate, but what else was it? And interior design.
Well, I just, you know, I love the looking at interiors of houses, and it just, you know, love to decorate, love to, you know, see people's yards, and it just seemed like such a fun job to do that. How could you not go get licensed and do this? Jump right in.
I love it. But, so you get your license and you jump in. And what did that look like?
Well, it was a slow process. I was a big studier of the market, and back then which most people can't probably imagine, the younger agents, I mean, we had these big books and you got them every week. And I would sit and peruse them of all of our neighborhood houses. And of course, you didn't know what the interiors looked like. So you had to go on broker tour. So, and on broker tour, you always got lunch or something. So it was just, you know, very fun.
Yeah.
And that was back in the 80s. And that was a lot about the real estate business because interest rates, I laugh when everybody says, oh my God, interest rates were 7 or 8, you know, hopefully they don't go back there. Our interest rates were 18%. So most of the homes were sold on contract sales because there wasn't a lot of bank financing that anyone would possibly do. And, you know, it was a much different environment, a much different industry back then.
Wow. So back then, now let's talk about today, and then we're going to go back then and talk about your first deal. So tell us a little bit about today. You've got a team with 3 agents, but give us a little bit about what your business looks like.
Our business platform is basically it's luxury. That's where we came out of because I did a lot of development work. So when I got out of resale for a while and then did 4 or 5 developments for developers. One of them was the Jack Nicklaus Development Corporation. So I actually was the first person that was hired in Illinois from sales capacity in a community called Windstone in North Barrington. And it was a 750-acre development. It was raw.
And how many years ago was that?
That was in 1989.
And you said that was 750-acre raw development?
Yep. Yep. They put the golf course in. So Nicklaus was actually here with his senior designers developing the golf course. And we were developing the home sites. And we actually, the sister community is right down the street from you in Alpharetta. It's Country Club of the South.
Ah, okay.
So that was our sister community. In fact, we all flew out there to see what the sales center looked like and sort of, you know, got an idea of what the country club was going to look like. And although it was different architecture style between from Atlanta than Chicago, but that's when I transitioned for a few years into development sales. And that was the start of it. And then I did four more developments for 4 different local developers here in Chicago when we actually got Windstone was, you know, selling pretty quickly. We put a featured builders program together with 12 different builders that were the actual builders that we suggested the clients use. And it was really fun. We walked the lots with them. We went, you know, it was right from the ground, boots on and out you went.
Wow. So you were in 1985 when you started the Jack Nicklaus development,
'86 was when I was here.
So you had been an agent.
I'd been a resale.
You were a brand new agent.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
And so you started out on site, 1986, Jack Nicklaus, you were the first salesperson hired for on site, and you did that and then 4 more developments.
Yep. For more local developers.
So what did that look like? So obviously as a resale agent, you touched on that. You've got your books, you're looking in the books, and then you go into what an opportunity.
It was a
new development. What was that like to all of us resale agents who don't know that role very well?
They didn't understand it. They didn't understand how the resale world would enter into the development world. And we made it because they had had the experience down in Atlanta with Country Club of the South, where they had their own sales team in and they weren't cooperating with the realtors. And it was a pretty big mistake that they made. And so they had learned their lesson. And so
especially in Atlanta of all markets, this one market you don't do that in.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Chicago's pretty much the same way. I mean, you guys have a lot, we have a lot of synergies that are similar. And especially with the old guard. And so, and Barrington has a lot of that where it was the old guard realtors and, you know, they sort of own the marketplace and you didn't make them angry. So
not a good idea.
We opened the doors to them and literally all they had to do was bring their client in, let us work with them, and we paid them a commission. And so it was a very easy process for them. And I think that it probably helped put it on the marketplace and be probably one of the most, at one point in time, I know it was considered one of the most successful developments in for sure the Chicagoland area and even in the Nicholas, because we literally deposited, did site selection, and went to contract within 13 months of starting sales on almost 75% of the community.
And were those pre-sales? Because you said raw, like, yeah. I'm assuming that means not
entitled, it was the lots.
Not developed, not, okay. So it was developed, but they weren't built.
No, we were on Jeep trails. We had Jeeps and we were going through the property and.
So you guys saw that vision.
It was really fun. Well, the property was magnificent. They had put together 27 contiguous pieces of property in order to come up with the 750 acres. And W. Clement Stone had the original 300 acres of it. And so a lot of people in Chicago knew who W. Clement Stone was. I mean, he was a local philanthropist. And it was the first new country club probably in, could be 75 years, private country club that, you know, came into the marketplace. So it was a lot of fun. I think that from that, I really enjoyed the development side of the sales process more than anything. And especially the new home sale process was really a lot of fun because you were working with clients. They were so excited. You're involved with their architect picking out the sites. Then you're involved with putting them with one of the builders and you're helping them with their building plans. You know, they're always using you as their soundboard. And it was a process that I'm not so sure is duplicated today very often.
Wow. Because you were, and by that you mean, you said it was a process that's not done or replicated or duplicated today very often. And is that because you were holding their hand from literally raw land to developed built home and a finished product? And you pre-sold it in 13 months.
Yes. Yes.
Unbelievable.
We did.
And then you said after that, four more developments?
Yes, I did. From that, I did a local developer actually who was in the commercial business, a huge commercial, very, very big commercial global company. And he had a horse farm that he had, and he developed some houses on it, and he was trying to develop the second phase of it. And he was a pretty expensive commercial developer. And so he was trying to develop the houses the same way, and the prices were out of sight. And there was just lots of things. And he went out and found this one, you know, onesie twosie kind of local builder to sort of put the project up. And they just, it was just a mess. And so I sat next to him at a charity function and he said to me, and he knew my husband pretty well. And he goes, "Will you come straighten this out?" And I go, "Yes, we can do that." And so we actually took a couple of the architectural, it was an empty nester product. So we took some of the floor.
And what plan. Year was this?
This would have been probably in, let's see, 86 to probably right in the early 90s.
So you did Winstone.
I did Winstone.
Early 90s, and you're basically at a, so he's, this commercial builder's trying to do residential. I love that because I've got a commercial husband. He's always trying to tell me how to do residential. No, he's not. I'm kidding. He's going to kill me for saying that because it's not true. But anyway, and then, but they do tend to have good size egos. Yeah. So he comes in and he says, he realizes this isn't going well.
Yeah.
And you happen to see him and you're and you have the conversation. Okay. Can you fix this for me, Christy? And you say yes.
Yes.
And when you came in there, what did it look like when you got there? And what did you do? And what did it look like? What was the impact? What was the end result?
Well, what he was doing was he had this builder that had only built one house at a time. And so we said, okay, I need a spec house. And we went to, we had connections with a local furniture company. We went to them. We put up a model. We pulled four different floor plans. We got a builder in that was a little bit better at more production building. Still a semi-custom builder. So not a real big production builder, but a semi-custom builder. We brought him up from the south suburbs and he put a crew up here and we opened up the sales center. And
how many lots was that one?
I'm sorry, how many lots?
How many homes?
Yeah. Oh, that one was probably, I think that was about 40. That was about 40 homes, yeah.
So one at a time for 40 homes isn't going to go very well.
No, but he had two developments because we did the one and then he had another development. It was pretty funny. He was running, trying to staff it out, you know, a person staffing it out of a farmhouse that was on the property. And, And so we cleaned that up. We put a parade of homes in there actually.
Yeah.
And he was a pretty well-to-do guy. So I had him, I suggested to him that we subordinate four builders with the lots and let them put the homes up on our lots. And then we put it in back then, parade of homes were a big deal. And so
what parade of homes is like a group of floor plans to choose from. What does that mean?
Yeah. The local newspaper used to run a big,
so it's media.
Yeah.
So parade of homes was like a weekly feature that you did for properties or.
Well, no, it was actually a month long of Saturdays and Sundays where all the homes had to be open. And so it was called the Parade of Homes.
It's kind of like the caravan, but it's not agents.
Yeah. Agents.
Yeah. So you had the Parade of Homes, which got so you generated traffic. We had a parade of homes
there and we subordinated the lots for four different builders. And they put up spec houses that had to be opened during that month for those Saturday and Sundays. And and we sold a good percentage of the lots. And then we had an opportunity to go to jump to another developer that was, they were already started and were pretty much on their way. And from there, we kind of went to another developer that was basically a realtor. He was a realtor that had a real estate office and he was doing a subdivision, which we had about 68 homes in them. And he had a trailer on the site and was staffing it with floor time. So
nobody knew anything about the houses.
Nobody knew anything about it. And so he came to me and said, can you help me? And I said, if you listen to me, I will. And he did.
Say that again. Can you help me? If you listen to me, I will. Yeah, yeah. If you listen, I can help you. What a great lesson. What a great answer. I love you have all these like elements of brilliance and you just kind of roll over them like it's nothing.
Well, it's the truth though.
Yeah. But I mean, the guy like this successful developer can't figure it out. And you're like, well, if we just build a house they can see first and then we build more than one at a time. And then we actually like have them available and promote it so people can walk through them. Like all obvious, but you laid it out and made sure it all happened.
Yeah.
So anyway, you've got this real estate agent with subdivision of 68 homes. He thought he could just like put bodies in a sales trailer or whatever and sell it. And that wasn't working. So you came in.
So we came in and again, we had him build us a model. And actually we suggested that he had four models And so, or four floor plans.
So he had that part figured out.
Yeah. He had four floor plans and, we asked him if he would build those four houses. So basically, as spec houses, and we could use them as models for the rest of the community. And so he did, he said, okay. And he had a pretty strong backer that we knew. And so he trusted us. And so we went in and took the four floor plans, had the models done, and moved into one of the models with our sales office. And literally that community, we sold all but probably the last 10 lots out of it before I left. Because he was pretty much, they could pretty much, you know, do it on their own by then.
So how long did it take you to sell those?
I would say that we were there for probably 18, 19 months and got them all done pretty much.
And then we
won sales and marketing team of the year that year for that subdivision.
Okay. So here's a question for our listeners. Yeah. You won sales and marketing team that year. And that was by then, that was what, late 90s, early 90s?
Yeah.
Later?
Actually, I got my date screwed up. That was 91. We did that development before we did the commercial developers development.
So Winstone, then the realtor you helped, and then you did the commercial development of 40 homes. Yep. And the one that you did with 68 homes, the second one for the realtor, that was a 91 sales and marketing team of the year. Was that because there was something special you were doing or your results were good and they just gave it to you?
Well, it was kind of funny. I mean, I guess this is a pretty funny story. Okay. So we did have a marketing person that we had on staff, and they were actually a PR person. I shouldn't say they were PR. And so the PR person came to us and they were pretty impressed by how we, some of the things that we did. We just made it real homey. Like even up at the Winstone subdivision, every house that we broke ground, I mean, I'm remembering all this stuff now. We used to go out, and when the builder was going to, when he had the foundation in, we would go out and set up a card table and have the local grocery store made us a sheet cake. And we had the rendering of their house on the sheet cake, and we'd have balloons and champagne, and we would have a groundbreaking party. And we did that for.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. Everybody looked forward. Oh, they all wanted their groundbreaking.
I mean, you've got to buy a house. Like, really? Like, but it's funny, but really, like it or not, we buy houses for things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's brilliant. And yeah. Maybe I'm an idiot, but I've never seen or heard of that before.
I don't know of anybody that's really done. I don't
did
even
did your
know
PR. Who thought of that? Was it the PR? That is
we did. I don't know. We just, you know, kind of like, well, why don't we, let's do a little party about it. And then, you know, we went down to the, our local grocery store is called the Jewel, and they had a bakery department, and put kids' pictures on cakes, and we go, could you put a house on a cake? And they go, sure. So we sent it down there.
So did you send like the drawings from the architect?
The architect would give us the rendering.
The rendering.
Yeah.
I love that.
Fun.
I'm going to edit out this part of the episode so nobody else has this idea. And I'm the only agent doing it now. I'm kidding. I won't do that. But like that is so, okay. So it's the little things.
Yes.
That makes such an impact. What a fun thing to do. So what else? Like, so no wonder sales and marketing.
What we've evolved to in real estate is this not being done. So I'm going to preface that with what I'm going to say. So in the next development we did, which was another, you know, it was a smaller community, but very family.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I do want us to keep up. Number one was Winstone, 750 acres.
So one was Winstone. And then the second one is actually, the development I'm going to tell you about this time. Okay. And the Pray to Homes one was the development after that.
Okay.
Okay.
That was 40 homes.
Yeah.
The second one though, the real estate agent who was the developer of 68 homes.
Yes.
This is the one we're talking about now.
Yes.
Which you got sales and marketing team of the year for.
Yes. So the PR person came to us and said they were members of the Home Builders Association in Chicago. And they came to us and said, you know, there's an award for sales and marketing team of the year, but you have to put together a whole project of how you sold out or how you, you know, have been successful selling the development. And she came to us like a week before they were going to choose who was the person. And in that development, one of the things that we did was while we were building the homes, as the families were moving in, we had a family board in there. And so when we'd sign their contract, they'd bring their kids and they'd come in for a picture and they'd stand in front of the renderings and we'd take a picture with them with signing their contract. And then we'd take a picture of them with their family. And we had a big board up and we had all the families and we got their permissions and they all loved it. Because when somebody came into the sales center back then, it was a big deal. There wasn't too many new subdivisions in Barrington, and they all were worried about, are there families in here? Are there, you know? So we had all these pictures of what the families were, and they loved it. And then we had a block party at the model for everybody that had purchased. And, you know, we had clowns and all kinds of stuff there. And so I think everything was all back then. It was revolved around a family community.
Yeah.
And everybody knew each other. They all knew the stages of their houses because we had had this party.
You just create a sense of community before the houses are even there.
Exactly.
Which actually generated more people wanting to be a part of the community and the anticipation and the...
Yep. Yeah.
Wow. And so, this was the same neighborhood you did the rendering cakes for?
No, that Winstone was the Jack Nicklaus development.
Winstone, the 750 acre. Okay. So back to the, so you got the
smaller development.
Okay. Though. And this is the one you got the sales and marketing award.
Yes. For. And how that was a funny story because the PR agent came to us like the week before we had to have all the materials in.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, you know, we were up against the big block builders. I mean, they had whole advertising companies that were putting it on. Yes. So we kind of thought we kind of laughed and made a little bit of a joke about it. And we did it like a science project. We went and got the, what do you call those, poster board things?
Yeah.
Where you stand them up, the three. And we made a little mini board of our family board. And we had pictures that we had of the block parties. And we did we showed the renderings of the models. And I mean, we did it in like six stages of the cardboard boards. And literally they drove it down and we won. We weren't even at the dinner. Cause we thought we never,
there's no way. So how did you find out you won? Like after the dinner?
The PR agent was there because she had done PR for a couple of the other big builders. And she called we got called at like 9 o'clock at night and said, you guys are not going to believe this. And we're like, oh my God, it was like a science project for an eighth grade science fair. That's what we turned in. And
oh my gosh,
it was hysterical. We were laughing the whole time we were doing it because we were like, this is hysterical. This is like and pop compared to the big, you know, the big advertising companies doing this for all these guys. They must have just been shaking their heads.
But I mean, like, what a great story. It reminds me of David and Goliath, Malcolm Gladwell. It's the same thing. Like, you just were who you were and used what you had and what you were brilliant at, which read David and Goliath, everybody, because it's not what we all perceive it to be. You dominated with that.
Well, it was simple. It was just about people.
Yeah. And what would you say? I mean, you kind of answered it, but to dig a little deeper, when you're doing implementing the marketing that you are, and it's so personal and has such a personal touch, because when you look at it, you're like, oh, of course, I would think of that. Like, but only you were doing it and only your team was doing it. What is the difference? How do you, what do you, what is the mindset? What is the approach to always have that personal touch and do things differently? Or what was it?
I think it was just the genuineness of it. You know, it wasn't complicated. It was instead of all of the pizzazz and all the smoke and mirrors that everybody tried to do, it was like, you know, like the groundbreaking parties. I mean, here's, you know, adults enjoying a birthday party in a sense for their house.
Yeah. You know? A birthday party for your house. I love it.
It was just the
great name for it.
And, you know, we did try to break some champagne bottles like they do on the ships. We did try to break a couple of them across the, but nobody ever broke one, you know, and we just tried to make it fun. And I think that it was simple, genuine fun is what it was.
So obviously you had a great time in development. And how many years did you, so 85 you started and then you got to transition into a resale. What year about when did that happen?
Well, it happened when we went back to Windstone and bought the real estate office from the developer.
Okay. And
we ran that from 1995 to 2007.
Wow.
And we sold it in 2007.
And so there are two quotes. I want to hear about 95 to 2007, but who'd you sell it to in 2007?
Well, 2005, this is kind of another part of the story, I guess. 2005, Sotheby's had just procured the licensing agreement for the real estate division in 2004. And they had put some, you know, they had hired a sales guy, put them boots on the street to go find real estate companies that fit their model. And we really did fit their model because you have to remember, I mean, the Nicholas Development Corporation built our office. Well, it was beautiful.
You were the sales and marketing team of the year and you only did renderings of people's homes as cake. I mean, yeah, obviously.
It does sound kind of ridiculous.
Obviously. Oh, it's awesome. I'm so jealous. Like, I want to be there. Right? Yeah. Okay. So
they came to us in 2005 and trying to basically sell us a franchise. I mean, you had to be approved to be a Sotheby's office. And we met all of their qualifications. And I had a partner in the Windstone Realty office. And he was older than me. He was a friend of my husband's and he was older than I was. And he was just like, I'm not going back and doing this again in a franchise. He had already owned a franchise office at one point in time. And so, you know, we just kind of passed on it. And we had been lucky enough to develop our own website at that time, back in 2000, actually, and I think 2003, we actually had a website that had a pretty substantial amount of hits on it because we designed it around looking like we were a developer sales office, which we were an independently owned sales office, but we designed it and acted like we were still the developers of the property. And that's how we ran it. So, you know, like we did our ads in Unique Homes and we designed them just like Golden Bear would design the sites or the advertising.
Good question, because we're fast forwarding so much, we're skipping parts, because you say we designed it, but you're in 1995, you started your own office, but you're also in resale now.
Right. Oh yeah. We're totally.
But you're marketing your listings as if you were a developer. I mean, like, here's the thing, Christy, everything you say, you're like, oh, I mean, you say it like you're telling me how to bake cookies, but it is a lot more impressive than that, just for the record. So I don't want anybody missing this. This is awesome. So you come in and you basically took everything you did for developers and you just applied it
Right.
to resell. Like,
right.
Duh.
And we but actually, we welcomed the outside real estate world to come into our office. I mean, we would actually, our girls would be getting them tea and coffee for their clients and let them sit into our conference room and write contracts, not all the time, but there was quite a few of them that did that weren't even our listings they were selling. They were selling another agent's listing that was listed in the development, but we opened our office to them. So
were you friends with Horst Schultz? Do you know who that is?
No, I don't.
He's the guy who ran the Ritz-Carlton and applies all the concepts.
Oh, yeah. And now I know who he is. Of course I know.
Yeah. But you do things. I've just finished his book, which I listened to him and known who he was, but I literally just maybe a couple of days ago finished his book.
Yeah.
Like everything you do you don't articulate that that's what you're doing, but your actions are exactly how he says to do things, like to a T. Like the other agents from other offices coming in and treating them the way you did.
Yeah.
That's his philosophy.
Yeah.
That's how he treats people. There's this special, genuine touch, you know, the ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. So,
and they're really, I mean, it would used to be so funny because we were like, well, this just makes sense to us because literally they are now in our office. They are having our staff help them. And when they go to relist their house, who are they going to call? They're going to call us.
Right.
I'm not going to call the agent that just wrote their offer and sold them.
Right. Right. And the agent's going to come sign up for your office and give you, right? I mean, like that's what's going to happen. Everybody wants to be there.
Yeah,
just get in line.
Sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's because so many people don't see and think of it that way. It's just so brilliant. So 19, you haven't finished it, have you? So back to 2005. So 2005, you qualify for SIR. But you're like, no, not doing that.
Yeah.
Passed on it. You were telling me about your website in 2003, but let's get through the story about 2005 and SIR and what happened in 2007. And then we're going to go back to 1995, if everybody's keeping up, and talk about that's when you launched your resale office, the resale office. But let's talk about 2000, get through this franchise story, because I love this.
Well, so Sotheby's came to us, and at the time they were, you know, obviously just in the process of putting all this together. I think they had the flagship stores in New York and a couple of the coastal properties, but they were looking at franchise. You know, they were outselling their franchises, what they were doing, but in a qualifying way. Because they were still Sotheby's and it was the brand and you had to really fit the brand. And we did fit the brand. And, but we were getting a lot of hits on, and, you know, I would go on their site and I didn't think it was as good as ours. I told that to Wendy Purvey the other day and she started laughing.
Love it.
We passed. Well, they came back to us in 06, probably closer to the mid part of 06. And I had someone that I had sold a house to, and they really wanted to come work for us. They really wanted to be a partner, and we weren't interested in another partner. And so, I had mentioned to them that Sotheby's had come to us, you know, and that we were, you know, didn't think we wanted to do the franchise, but that it was out there. Well, in the beginning of 07, they had made a hard push, and this person came to me and said, you know what, how about if I just buy you? And so we were sensing the business getting a little more difficult. The sales were getting a little harder in 07. You know, we had no idea that we were going to be going into the recession that we went into. And so obviously with my partner who was older than me, I walked into his office and I said, hey, you want to sell? And he was like, absolutely. And so I said, all right. I go, but well, here's what we have to do. I go, we have to go get the Sotheby's franchise. And so we worked on that. and we were able to get the Sotheby's franchise. And in June of 07, we basically sold the office and took the franchise at the same time. So we were the ones that were approved for the franchise, but they had given us their blessing to pass it on to the new owner because we had told them that we were selling the office and they had met. So it was just one seamless transaction.
And you didn't get out?
I didn't get out. I stayed there for about a year. And
I mean, out of business. But keep going. Yeah.
I stayed in that office for about a year, the Sotheby's office. And then Coldwell Banker was kind of calling my name. And so I went down to Coldwell Banker and did a little stint down there when they had previews. And then the previews, you know, it just didn't roll. They just didn't continue it as they should have. And yeah. They decided that they didn't really, you know, previews in the Midwest with the recession and all of that. Wasn't.
Cause this was what, 08 by now, by the time that was happening? We were
in, yes, I was in 08. That's exactly when it was, 08. And then, so we stayed at Coldwell Banker until about, I think 016 or to 2016. And then in 2016, Jameson came in and bought the franchises for Barrington. And it was time for us to go back to Sotheby's because Sotheby's was actually always in my heart. It was the only brand that I knew that I could pass my baby of an office onto. And so that's the whole story.
So, and then in 16, and then that was 5 years ago.
Yeah. Nice. I've been back at Jameson in the, over the last, 5-6 years.
I mean, don't you want to like stop? No, I'm kidding. I mean, what an amazing career.
I keep saying I got another go around.
Right. There's always something else to look forward to, especially when you know you can quit, when you know you're good, like you can't stop. There's always something to go after. So I'm going to do a recap on your career. You get in the business, and then we're going to ask some more questions. So you get in the business in, I'm not yet because I have some questions. Because everybody can follow. 86, you become an agent. You're with developers until 95. 95, you start a brokerage. And when you start the brokerage, you're doing resales, but you're really doing them the same way you do new construction, which gave you this incredibly Ritz-Carlton, as I call it, custom, over the top, that was so completely, like, there was no competition because you did such a great job of marketing from what you learned from new development. 05, Sotheby's comes in. By 07, you end up selling to someone who takes it as a Sotheby's office. 08, you get a previews at Coldwell Banker. You were there until 2016. 16, you came back to Sotheby's. And now we are at the end of October in 2021, and you were still at Sotheby's.
I am.
One part we didn't talk about. 1995, when you go out of new development, uh-huh, new developments, and you go into this resale brokerage thing, what was that transition? How did that go? What were the differences, challenges? Give us go there, take us to that place in time, and what did that look like?
Well, the lucky part of that is that in order to use the name Winstone, it was trademarked, and we were Winstone Realty. We could only sell with inside the community of Winstone. And so since we had done all the Inception land sales there, I mean, it was a no-brainer for us to just continue on. I mean, most of those people knew us and they appreciated the real estate office being there. It was very easy for them. And you have to remember that we had a major amount, as you do now. And so, you know, I think Country Club of the South was a similar situation where there was a lot of transferee, corporate transferee, mm-hmm, clientele base in there. That was what Winstone was, you know. So we had you know, Motorola, Allstate. We had the CEO of Motorola that lived here. CEO of Allstate. We had the CEO of Kemper. We had the CEO. We just had, you know, all the division heads of presidents of and executives of Motorola. So, you know, we had Square D. We had, you know, it just all that corporate transferring back and forth in a golf course, a gated golf course, private country club community was, you know, it, I mean, we weren't rocket scientists. We just ran with the business that we had and we always did. And most of those corporations had offices throughout the country. And when they would transfer them back in to Chicago, here we were.
You made yourself the obvious choice. It was, you made it easy. I find too, a lot of people when they're relocating, if they can find that gated neighborhood community, it just gives them like, okay, I'm comfortable because I feel like I know what the, it's all here. You've got the site plan, you've got the houses. I know who lives here. I know what the lifestyle is and what the amenities are. I don't have to figure it out. I can do this. It's an easy thing. That's why I
understand that a lot of Chicago doesn't understand that. And
when you're an agent, that I get that for resale because you know what people want, especially when they're coming from other markets. So
yes, but we, you know, they, a lot of the resale agents were old guards that didn't do a lot of, you know, corporate transferee people. They did their old, you know, the old families that.
Okay, so talking about that, you just said, to repeat what you said, a lot of the agents were the old guards. It's kind of like when you come to Chicago or when you come to Atlanta, this is how it is and this is what you do.
Yes.
Now, what's interesting, and I'm stealing this from Jack Cotton, who was on the show a while back. He's been on the show 2 or 3 times, but it's been like, this is going to be about episode 240, whatever. He was in like 100. But he talks about it's that old guard or that, you know, old school way of doing things is very often the gateway for the newer agent. It's when you take for granted, nope, this is how it is. This is how we do it. There's no other way to do it. There's a lot of power in that, but there's also leaves room for what's missing and leaves that gap, especially the agents that assume, oh, this is mine. This is what we do.
Yep.
If you're in a seasoned agent, the minute you start doing that, watch out because here they come. And if you're a new agent, no, that's always there. And if you're a good agent and know it and you're seasoned and you learn and you have value and you offer it, you'll soar to success.
Well, and we embraced the old guard. You know, we had a couple of agents that literally had a driver. Okay. I mean, they were older. They actually had a driver, and one of them was, I think she did probably 60% of Motorola's business. Okay. And she would sit in the back seat with her client and her driver would drive and they'd come and my partner was pretty good friends with her and she was adorable. And he made a deal with her, which she loved. If they bought our listing, we paid for lunch. If she sold them a house of another listing, she would buy lunch.
I love that. Like, exactly. I mean, love that.
But she knew she could come in, you know, everybody treated her like she was a queen when she came in.
She clearly was.
She was. And, you know, everybody loved her and, you know, she would say, oh, honey, will you get them some tea? And, you know, like they were her employees and we,
it's just, not even her brokerage. Yeah. I love that.
So it was okay. We were fine. You know,
whatever it was, things that would have upset people, a lot of agents, especially because it can be a very territorial business.
Exactly.
You embraced it. You embraced it and ran with it and look at what it did.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's why we were so successful for so many years, because when I make the analogy of we still ran it like a development office, I think that it the lines blurred for the territorial agents. So they didn't feel that way because they knew we were always going to have their back. We were never going to try to show them up because we didn't have to.
Exactly. And that's not how you did business. That's not how you.
No, they needed us because we knew, you know, most of the houses in the community. We knew the quirks of them. We knew the positives of them. We knew the best sites. We knew that we could listen to their clients and say, I think you should see this, this, and this house, you know. And of course, we would tell them, you know, look, we're only going to be selling our listings. So the other listings, you're on your own with.
Yeah. Well, something else interesting, a lot of neighborhoods that do that, this is just a generalization. It's not true everywhere. But they often don't, as you said in the beginning of this interview, they often don't honor resale or agents with other brokerages, even when they're established and they've grown. It's kind of like, no, this is our community and our agents do this community, and outside agents, we don't honor. Now, this doesn't happen as often in Atlanta, because in Atlanta, just like you said, you do have the old guard, and it's powerful. Don't mess with it. So, but you guys, you made sure not to do that. You made sure to embrace, and that's embrace, it's not competition.
Probably 5 to 7 agents that would literally call us before the client came in. They'd give us the background. They'd say, well, you pick the houses out where you think that they should see. And we'd send them the list. And then, and we actually would even say, if there was a couple of houses that we felt that, you know, should be on the we'd say, you know what, these are listed by these agents, but they should probably see them.
Wow. Because
they're going to, you don't want them not to see something and think they missed it, because so we would do that a lot, you know, just to, I don't know. We just thought it was good business.
Now, was there some lesson you learned, or is that just how you do things and why?
I think that's just how I do things in life. I mean, you know, I guess I could be a desk agent at the Four Seasons or the Ritz-Carlton.
Probably doing better doing this though, but anyway.
But, you know, I mean, that's just, it's a concierge in a sense, you know.
He'll author a book with Horst Schultz, say, hey, you need a sequel for real estate. We'll write it together. Right? Okay. Yeah. So now, I think we've been talking for 50 minutes or so. So I want to ask you some questions though. So now we look at your career. Now we know your story.
Okay.
What would you say, which some of it's come out, but I want it in your perspective, is your number one, let's just talk about your biggest aha about real estate in general and this business. And are they different from resale versus new construction?
No, I don't think it's any different. New. I mean, I still will go in. I mean, I just had a client buy new construction from MI Homes, and they, you know what, their office ran like it should. They were very helpful. Of course, I am smarter than the average agent that's just dropping off their client there, signing them in. But I asked a lot of questions. I said to them, I hope they weren't offended, but I was going to be with my client through this process of getting them through contract. And because it's overwhelming that, you know, they have to go in, they have to pick all their, it's quite a process for them. And so I wanted to make sure, and these were younger kids, and I wanted to make sure that they understood what they were signing off on and what they were doing and what the extras were going to be and all of those things. And you know what, they were thankful. Because that's I'm sure I was probably, you know, the odd agent that would do that, because the easiest thing is to just go hand them your card, fill out the thing and hand them back, you know.
Yeah.
It's not, and then walk out and wait till the house is built and have a nice check. Yes. But I wanted to make sure that they were going to be happy in their house. And
yeah,
I think the end result.
Yeah. So back to the question.
Yeah.
I'm going to rephrase it. Because you didn't answer it. Coming into this business, we all have an idea of, here's what it's like. And then we get in and we're like, oh, this is what it's really like. Or, oh, I thought that would work, but this works. Huh. What was yours? What was a big one?
Well, I still think it's just, it's the, the genuineness of caring about what's in the client's best interest and how you have to get there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think it's any more complicated than that. I mean, yeah. It's not, I guess it's my aha, but it's,
yeah.
I am.
Yeah. No, I love that. Exactly. So I think a lot of people would need to have that aha, because it's amazing, because that aha is actually quite lucrative.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, it is.
It's amazing how when you stop chasing it, it comes to you. You still have to do the right things. So looking at real estate over the years of your career, it has changed an awful lot. We started in the beginning talking about the books that you got every week. Mm-hmm. And then you've been through the great, I mean, there were recessions. I just remember the Great Recession, because that was like, I'd not been an agent but 5 years and that happened. But as you go through the ups and downs and the technology and everything that changes, two things, what remains constant and how do you shift to keep your edge in the market?
Well, I think that, and there have been a tremendous amount of changes over my career. You know, the technology changes of every single day are, I think, the hardest for the older agents. And they are, I think that that's the hardest part of the business right now for me. Without having somebody you have to have somebody that's younger that you can just say, here, do this. Cause our brains they don't think the same way that theirs do. You know, we grew up with a pencil in our hand. They grew up with a computer in their hand. So it's just that part of it is the hardest part of it. But it hasn't made me decide to quit yet.
I would think it has an advantage. We talked about this, because the advantage is you don't get lost in your iPhone or in your computer. You're with people still. You're in the real world. We are selling real estate.
Yes. Yes. And I think that we still do some old things that I'm listening to some of the gurus that are talking, and I'm finding a common theme in their resurgence. And we still do direct mail, we still do postcards, we still do print magazines. I'm a person that I can't look at a magazine in a digital format. It just doesn't do it for me. I like to see it and touch it and read part of it and put it down. I don't like to sign back into my computer and find the page I was on or go through, you know. So that's probably some people, the newer agents, they don't think that that's necessary. You know, it's all about the internet and on social media. Of course, we're on all of those platforms and we have to be. But we also,
you're quite good. Everybody needs to check you out on Instagram. I mean, you're everywhere. You are. You're an agent. I don't forget. You're so great on Instagram. And your stuff's beautiful. All right. Now we're going. Oh, go ahead. Finish.
No, that's it. I'm good.
Final three. Yes. Final three questions. So okay. Number one, if there is, or what resource do you think has most impacted or you can most attribute to your success?
As much as it pains me to say this, it probably is the internet.
Not funny.
I think that the exposure that it delivers is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And I think it's just a matter of being able to choose the right content to get out into that exposure.
So what would you say that is?
Well, I think that we try to paint a genuine picture of, you know, we're in the business of real estate. We're in the business of selling homes, and we don't have a lot of, we have on most of the exposure. I mean, even in my local magazine articles, I mean, I'm a small picture in the corner. I believe in presenting my properties. I don't believe in presenting me. I'm not selling me. I'm selling my clients' homes. And I think that kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's kind of somewhat of a unfortunate today that where agents feel that they have to be constantly selling themselves. If they sell their houses, they'll sell enough of them that they'll get the recognition. And
the house sales will go quite well when you do that.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's all about it. To me, everything is about the client and how we're going to get the job done for them. And I don't think that I'm getting the job done for them by putting my, you know, my whole body on an ad and a picture of me and all of that. I think I'm painting my, you know, it's basically the Sotheby's platform, the visualness of that. I mean, the visualness of a beautiful home says more than you can say in words.
So true.
So
next question.
Okay.
I mean, I have nothing to add to that. Like, so next question.
Okay.
Book. What book do we have to read or has changed your life or do you recommend?
Well, I do, and I know we talked a lot about this a little bit, and I think that if I was for my team and I have a newer agent coming on, and I'm going to suggest that they do read the Ninja Selling book. And I think because it has a lot of old principles in it, in today's world. And I think that that's what I took out of it. I mean, you could do, you know, they tell you to do a lot of different things, but it's basically the premise there that I took from it. And I just finished reading it was connecting with people, staying connected with people, not trying to connect with, you know, tens of thousands of people, but trying to connect with your 100. And I think that we forget about that. We're trying to expose ourselves to so many things. And a lot of times we're missing what's right in front of us. And I think the other book that I'm only half finished with, so I'm kind of giving it to you as I'm reading it. But it was I just saw the speaker and it was called Soundtracks.
Ooh.
And it's by, I'm going to have to pull it off here. John Acuff.
How do you spell his last name? Oh, is that the book?
It's the book.
Yeah. Acuff. So, okay. What is the takeaway? What is this about?
The takeaway of that is overthinking things.
Hmm.
And it talks about the soundtracks that you play in your head when you're overthinking something and what you're saying a lot of times. You know, he has a reference in the book about him. He travels a lot. And so every time he goes out of town, he starts a day or two early telling his kids, you know, now don't worry, dad's going to be back. He's only going for a short period of time, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Setting this whole premise, he's thinking he's setting it, you know.
He's just telling them to worry and that he might not be back and that he.
Exactly.
That is a long time. And oh my gosh, I love this guy because it's like when you look in the mirror and say, I'm so pretty, it's like, why does she think she's ugly?
Yeah, it's all those soundtracks that you play.
Yeah, I love it.
To them, will you stop doing that? They're okay. They know daddy goes and he goes on a plane to work. It's okay.
Right.
You're scary.
So now they're like, what? Right. And we do that to ourselves.
Yep. Yep. And that's, I mean, that's so many great analogies in there. And I'm not finished with it, but he was a great speaker, just a terrific speaker. And he's written seven books.
Because people talk about like affirmation. I'm like, don't affirmation me. Don't, because for me, it's what he's talking about. I'm like, it's just like, if you're going to get up every day and tell yourself how whatever you are, you're just telling yourself you're not. Now, I don't know if that's what the book is, but I just.
Yeah, that's the premise of it. It's basically the solution of overthinking.
Love, 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 love. All right. Last question.
Okay.
As we close out this interview, if I and everybody else listening are going to forget everything but one thing today, what do you hope we take away from this?
To be genuine. You know, treat people with kindness. And I know that sounds so trite today. And I almost didn't say it because it seems like it's the trend. But I think that a very genuine caring about a very big process in people's life. And I think that when you show that, you know, every step of the way, it can be daunting sometimes as an agent, but because if you do take it to the letter of the law, you have to be there with them every step, you know, including them trying to pack their house, you know, and I'm not saying that you have to be in there and packing their house, but, you know, finding the resources for them because
acknowledging it.
That's true. And they're overwhelmed by it. It's an overwhelming process. And I think that we have to respect that as agents.
Well said. Christy, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So good to have you on. So good to see you.
It was so fun.
Thanks for listening to the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. If you like this episode, please share it with friends. To find more episodes, search Jerry Metcalf Podcast on any platform for podcasts or go to jerrymetcalfpodcast.com. That's jerrymetcalfpodcast.com.